So welcome back to episode 14 of the Run It Three Ways podcast. We're back after the curse of episode 13, and thankfully I'm back in the UK now, so no dreaded Kenyan Wi-Fi to contend with this week. We've got a lot to catch up on, including a two-week stint at high altitude, a 1500-meter runner searching for fitness, and unfortunately an injured runner who's hanging up his running shoes for a pair of cleats and lycra. Chaps, how are we doing this week?
Now then, boys, we're back with a bang. Are we calling this episode 14 then, even though 13 didn't actually happen?
Yeah, I think we've got to just call it 14. 13 kind of happened. We got a tiny little bit of recording done, and then the Wi-Fi cut out, didn't it? So I think we just call this one episode 14, and we don't talk about episode 13 again, really. The curse 14. Of episode 13.
It's been nice, actually, because a lot of people were writing in saying, let's, you know, come on, give us an episode. I need my fix, which was quite nice to see that people actually care about the podcast coming out.
That's true.
So yeah, I'm glad we could get this recording. For context for the listeners, it's 1 p.m. and we don't normally record till about, what do we normally do? 8 p.m, 7 p.m. So we're normally an evening session kind of podcast, but we're having a little lunchtime chat today.
Yeah, Tuesday lunchtime.
Have you had your lunch yet, boys?
No.
I've just had some pasta, woofed that down before the recording. I thought, get that in now, and then we can have a proper chat without being too hungry.
Yeah, I had some noodles.
Oh, lovely. I'm the only one of the three of us who's actually got a normal, full-time, 9-to-5 job.
It's true. We pulled you away on your lunch break.
Yeah, I've come straight off a call onto another call.
That's commitment.
Yeah, it's just die for the pod.
Yeah. Well, on that note, we've been planning. It's not yet to be announced publicly, but we've been planning some ideas for the Patreon, haven't we, guys? About some extra content and things we could offer to people. So maybe Tom, we can help make the podcast a bit more worth it for you. You get paid on your lunch break soon.
Oh, stop it! It's well worth it anyway. I wouldn't change it for the world.
Lovely stuff. How are you anyway, Tom? Because last episode, or the last one that we actually recorded, you'd run 1.86 miles in the month. I believe the number is still 1.86.
So yeah. I wonder if I should just jump into it, because I don't have a training week to go through. I don't have like a Monday to Sunday from last week to really divulge, because I've done absolutely no running for 3 weeks now, which is quite sad, isn't it, really?
And, yeah, it is indeed. I don't know how I'd be coping if I were in your boat, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, not brilliantly is the answer to that question. But I think last time when we tried to record before the internet connection debacle happened, we got about 10, 15 minutes in, maybe. And it's funny, really, thinking back on that conversation, because I think I was at a point where, you know, the first week when you get a niggle, like the first few days or so, you're still hyper-focused on getting back to running, and you're confident and optimistic that it's not going to be that long and so on. I think last week I crossed the threshold from kind of staying super focused on running and still consuming loads of running content and, you know, trying to stay sharp mentally in that regard, into realizing that this is probably going to be a little bit more of a long-term thing, and feeling a bit like sad about it. And now this week, it's like, a whole different mentality again, where I'm allowed to get on the bike. The bike doesn't seem to be making anything worse, so I've at least got like some source of endorphins to get me going. So it's a roller coaster, this being injured malarkey.
And with regards to the scan, I know you said in the week, is that something you're planning on having done, just to see if you can find out what is causing the issues?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm hoping to get a scan on the 31st of this month. So 31st of March, I should have a scan booked in, an MRI booked in. It's a pain in the ass. Like it's a bloody nightmare trying to go through like the actual official channels, like going through NHS, because what happens is you go to a GP, explain your symptoms. First of all, they try and just fob you off with anti-inflammatories and rest, which has already happened. Then you might get referred for an x-ray, but if you've got like a bone stress related injury, if you've got like a sacral stress fracture or whatever, it's not going to show up on an x-ray. You need an MRI. So then that shows nothing, and then maybe you'll get referred for an MRI, but you're talking a very lengthy process to get to that point. So what I'm going to have to do is go private, which is expensive, but at least I can get it like within a couple of weeks. And then Andy, Coach Andy, has got a guy. He's got a guy for everything. I think if my gutter was broken, he'd have a guy who could come and fix it. But he's got a guy who can interpret those results. So if I, all I've got to do is get the scan and get a digital copy of those results, which they email to you anyway, I think. And then he's going to have a look at them for me, hopefully, and say what's what. But yeah, that's where we're at the moment. Not really improved much at all for 3 weeks in terms of just discomfort doing general mundane day-to-day activities.
Mm. And just for the listeners, you've been to a couple of physios as well, haven't you, to see if they can give you any advice, but you didn't really have much luck.
No. So yeah, I've seen a couple of physios now who one gave me that dubious advice to try and run, which I think is probably what made this whole thing significantly worse than it could have been, basically. And then the other physio I saw, Paul, he's amazing. I'll trust him with my life. But again, he couldn't necessarily get to the root cause of what was going on from doing lots of different tests and, lots of strength tests with me and all that kind of stuff. He kept getting me to stand up and try having a little walk around after doing some sort of adjustment, and it was never any different. So he realized then as well that this isn't something that's just going to fix itself from doing some foam rolling and some yoga. And it's probably going to be a little bit more of a gradual process of, jumping on the bike, keeping fitness, or trying to, stay fit as possible on the bike.
Yeah, that to me sounds the most frustrating thing, not knowing what actually is causing the injury, because for runners, we can sort of work with a solution and a problem and a solution. But if we don't know what the problem is, then we can't like put in place like a plan of getting back to running, because we don't know how long it's going to be. We don't know what's causing it. So, yeah, that must be pretty tough, not knowing what actually is going on and not knowing what you can and can't do and how long the process is going to take.
Yeah.
What have you been doing, Tom?
What have I been doing? I'll be brutally honest. The last week or so has not been brilliant in that regard. Like I've just not, like I say, when it first happened, I think we were talking about this before we got cut off last week. When it first happened, I was still consuming loads of running content. I was still on Strava, like seeing what people were up to and immersing myself in it. Because I didn't want to lose, because of like how good I was feeling about running before this injury, I didn't want to lose that and feel like I had to start again. But then, again, like I mentioned, I think that got mentally exhausting when I realized it was going to be a longer road back to running. So the last week or so, I'm still working running, so I have to talk about running all of that stuff all day, every day anyway. But as far as outside of work is concerned, I haven't got a clue what's been going on in the running world. And it's been a little bit of a struggle to like watch running content, or, with like Barcelona Marathon that just happened and all that sort of stuff. I love going on Strava and seeing how everybody got on and, all that kind of rigmarole. But I haven't done that at all the last week.
I think that's pretty good though. I think there's merit to that in the sense of sometimes it's better to switch it off completely. And often you work in running, so you've got a primary reason to be on the ball with everything. And kind of similar to you, Ben, with like the fact that you create content, it does help to have an idea of what's going on. But from like an out and out training point of view, I can't imagine that, say, some of the top athletes are like looking on Strava to see what their competition's doing, or like, following the race results really closely months and months before they're going to eventually race at a championship or whatever. I think often we get a bit too caught up in what everyone else is doing. I know I'm particularly like just such a nosy person when it comes to running, and I'm always interested with like, oh, I wonder why you raced that. Or, let me check the start list for this race that I'm not even doing. It doesn't affect my life at all. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But I'll definitely look to see who's racing, or, find out the details. Is there going to be a pacer? What's this going to happen? And when I actually think about it, I'm like, why do I care? Do you know what I mean? And like, I kind of only do care because I'm just such a nerd with running and I kind of want to know who's doing what. But it does definitely have some merit to switch off and be like, actually, I don't really care what happens at the Barcelona Marathon, or like even I'm not going to watch it, or, you know, if people do well, they do well. I'll see it. Anything that's important enough to find out about, you're eventually going to find out anyway. So yeah, I wouldn't be too, it must be a bit hard to feel isolated and a bit disconnected from it all, because you're normally so on the ball, but kind of try and take it as a positive. I wouldn't be like, you know, it's a nice little mental refresh. So when eventually, because, you know, you're going to be able to run again at some point, you can dive straight back into it 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the plan. I think the other difficult part is it's mental at the moment for shoe releases. So I've had in the last 2 or 3 weeks an ungodly amount of deliveries that have rocked up of shoes that I can't run in. So I might start an Instagram series of shoes I've got that I can't run in, because it's ridiculous.
Oh, no.
Puma sent a box the other day with basically every shoe that they've got at the moment, like all of the key silos in the Puma lineup. So I think I've got about 6 pairs of Puma shoes, and I've not run a single step in any of them. And that's one of the hardest parts. Like, I'm so desperate, but at the same time, this isn't, sometimes you have an injury where you could run through it and it just be uncomfortable and make it worse. But, you know, like what you were saying before, Ben, like we've all had niggles where we run on them just to make sure that they are actually niggles. I physically can't run through this one. Like, I can't jog a couple of steps down the road without feeling it. So it's, yeah, I'm going to have to play the long game with it. But the good thing is, like I say, I'm allowed on the bike now. So I've got my first week this week of like structured bike training, I suppose, which
that'll definitely help though. Having a bit of structure against the week.
Definitely. And it's basically the same as a running week, you know, like, in terms of the structure of like easy, steady session, rest, steady, then long on the weekend. Like, it follows that same structure and hopefully will be a similar stimulus aerobically, so I won't be horrifically unfit when it does come back to actually running again.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even think about the fitness. I just think about it from like the mental point of view. Like, you're still going to get the endorphins from doing the exercise. You're still going to feel like you've completed something in your day. You're still going to have to think about what you're eating and drinking in the day, because you know that you need to prepare to go out on the bike later on in the same way you would. So hopefully you'll just benefit from getting, you know, like more of the general routine of being, you know, feeling like you're training for something back, which I always think helps. Like, when I'm just left to my own devices with a full rest week, I'm kind of, you know, not really knowing what to do. But even having a little bit of training, it kind of just gives you something for your day to work around, I guess.
Yeah, I think I ate Wagamama 3 times last week, so that needs to stop. And I need
That's a great choice, to be fair. What did you get?
Whoa. So I went a bit crazy, to be honest. I love those bao buns, you know, the
Yeah.
So they do like an amazing vegan mushroom one of them, and like a fake chicken version, which is also amazing. So I've got one of each of those, and then I sort of alternate for the main between like the Vigatsu, which is also very good if you've never had it.
Sorry, just to clarify, are you vegan or vegetarian?
I'm vegan.
Oh yeah. Shit!
Yeah, 10 years.
No, because my favorite thing from Wagamama's is the salt and pepper squid that they do, which is just an absolute banger. So
definitely got a vegan version of that.
I was just waiting for that to come into the conversation, but now I've realised that's not going to appear. And all of these vegan things I've never heard of on the menu. So
you, next time, right, Callum?
I've heard of the green tea. The green tea must be vegan.
You'd be amazed, right? They've got a full, I think, like more than 50% of their menu is plant based now, Wagamama, and it's all like really good. So
do you ever have Beyond Burgers? Not from Wagamama's, obviously.
Yeah, I do. But
I think they might be one of the greatest things to ever be invented, alongside electricity and cars. They are absolutely...
You're putting them in the same category as them.
They are absolutely fantastic.
Wow.
Like genuinely. Don't get me wrong, they break the bank. But, you know, when we're feeling a bit bougie, get some Beyond Burgers, get some brioche buns, caramelize a few onions, and I'm telling you now, that is an absolute game changer over dinner.
Another one for the cookbook.
It's so elite as well. Wait, mate, there's no recipe. You just stick it in the pan and then it's done. It's the simplest.
It's the best meal for runners, those ones.
If anyone listening has any other recommendations of good, like, just like rogue foods like that are pretty nice, because I never would pick up Beyond Burgers and think they're going to be nice until they were like thrust upon me and I was forced to eat it, and it's actually really nice. So if anyone else has got anything like that, then drop us a message.
I appreciate, Callum, that you're very open-minded with stuff like this. You know, some people be like, oh, Beyond Burger, I'm not eating that. But you're open to these things, and that's a very nice character trait.
I think it might be, like, don't quote me on this, people, and don't come for me if I'm wrong, but surely it's got to be healthier as well than eating, like, a big beef burger. So that's also a benefit.
Yeah, the fat content will genuinely be lower with vegan products. So probably a good healthy option as well for you.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people have stopped listening at this point. All off rate, 16 minutes and like 20 seconds is going to be astronomical, I reckon, here.
Yeah.
Should we get back on track? I think the last point, really, from an injury standpoint, actually relates to food a little bit. I don't know if anybody else is the same, if you boys are the same. My weight fluctuates massively. So I can, if I'm running well, I'll fall into like a really good weight for running just naturally. But if I'm not running and not eating particularly well, I gain weight like ridiculously quickly. So yeah, that, I think that's probably the toughest thing mentally for me has been like trying to control that, because food can be a really easy comfort, right? It's so easily accessible now with just Deliveroo, where you get food in 20 minutes, that without running, like you said, Callum, without that routine, without really having to think about what I eat, definitely gone off the rails a little bit over the last week or two in that sense. I think that's probably the worst possible thing that you can do for an injury. Like you can have...
Yes and no, I think, though, because what I would caveat that with is often we think that it's easy, or like the industry has basically taught us that, especially with Apple Watches and all this kind of data tracking, is like you burn X calories, so you need to take in X calories. So even if you don't count your calories, you're still conscious that, okay, I did a 14-mile run today, so I better make sure that I eat more at dinner, or I'm going to have this more fatty thing, or I'm going to have an alcoholic drink or whatever. And we take it as like replacing the calories. But based on that logic, when we don't burn the same amount, we think that we shouldn't eat the same amount, if you see what I mean, which generally speaking would be true. But in your case, your body is like fighting an injury. So actually the calories that you're expending, or like the energy and the goodness that your body needs to try and repair whatever issue is wrong with you, which it will be constantly trying to do 24/7, I would rather you eat more than less. Do you see what I mean? Like you need to give your body the energy to be able to fix itself, rather than restrict yourself and think, oh no, I'm not running as much, so I better cut back. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And I agree. I think it's more just a case of I've not only eaten more in the last couple of weeks, but eaten like I could count on one hand the amount of times I'd ordered food, you know, over the last 6 months. But in the last 2 weeks, it's been, I probably couldn't count it on two hands. Do you know what I mean? That's the difference. It's like, it's very easy for me to go to that, well, it doesn't matter because you're not running tomorrow. And then I end up eating a large Domino's and a medium Domino's in one go. And that's not great. So that's where I'm hoping that having the bike back in my life now and having that as like a structure to that training means that I'll, like you say, I will just have to fall back into that routine. And it will basically be the same as when I'm running, but just on two wheels instead of two legs. So I'm feeling a bit more optimistic about things now, but yeah, it's just difficult not having like a light at the end of the tunnel and not being able to feel like, oh, it feels way better today. Maybe I'll be able to run, you know, in a few days. I have no idea how long it's going to be. But I spoke to Johnny Meller. He's been a New Balance athlete for ages, 210 marathon guy, but he works for New Balance now in their marketing department. So I had a call with him just about some stuff that we've got coming up in the next couple of weeks. And he was asking about the injury and all that kind of stuff. And this is a man who's had, I think he's had two sacral stress fractures back to back. And when he was reeling off the symptoms and the things that he felt, I could tick every single box next to what he was saying. And if I get an MRI back and it does happen to be bone related, it could be, like, realistically, it could be 12 weeks without running, which is a horrific amount of time in my head. It's not that long in the grand scheme of things, but yeah, that's sort of what I'm preparing myself for. The fact that it could be like months without running rather than weeks.
Yeah, but if it is, like, what a great... Obviously, I'm thinking about it so unemotionally right now because I'm not the one in this situation. But, like, you just said it yourself. You had a call with a guy that's had that injury who has bounced back several times to run world-class times. Do you know what I mean? So you'd like to think if he can bounce back to run world-class times, I know he has the professional support, etc., then you'll be able to bounce back for your goals. Do you see what I mean? But don't get me wrong, mate. It will be shit. Like, but I think it's good that you're understanding that it will be shit. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's important to be self-aware of these things, isn't it? Rather than just going in with blind optimism. That's it. I don't want to take up too much time talking about not running whilst you boys are both doing all sorts.
I think it's good. I think it's really good because, like, it's not nice. Obviously, we all want to be running, but I think it's good to show that there is a balance because there'll be way more people. This is not in a disrespectful way to you, Ben, but there'll be way more people listening where their reality is that they're injured or they're going to get an injury, then there will be people that are going to head off to Kenya and have an amazing experience doing altitude training. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
So, like, I think it is good to have it as relatable as it is, as much as I'm looking forward to hearing, you know, Ben's goat curry stories or whatever he's going to tell us.
Oh, dear me. Should we do that then? Should we? That's enough of, like, tales of woe from myself. I'm getting back on the bike. I'm going to get fit on the bike. And I will, the plan is once the bike is, if that remains being pain-free, and once I'm able to walk without discomfort, then the bike will transition to cross-trainer, elliptical, and then that will eventually transition to actual running.
Perfect.
And for listeners' context, on the app that we used to record this, you can input any name, and Thomas decided to arrive on this call as Lance Armstrong. So I think he's liking the bike more than he's making out.
Yeah, look, the problem is, right, with the way that my head works, I could click my fingers and be a cyclist overnight. I could probably forget all about running and be full on into bikes tomorrow morning if I decided to.
It's dangerous. It's expensive sport.
Yeah, that's why I'm not trying to read anything about cycling. I don't want to watch any videos about it. I don't want to get sucked in because I will get sucked in and then I'll have to sell every single item that I own, including the laptop that we're recording this on.
All them Puma shoes will be gone. You just trade them in for a new bike.
Just to be able to buy like a wheel or a pedal on a bike, I'll have to do that.
What size shoe are you, Tom?
What size shoe am I? I am an 8.5.
8.5.
All right, no worries. Well, if you've got any shoes going, then that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
They'll be half size too big for you, Callum.
Well, I'm sure
and
I
a full
can
size too big for me.
I wear 8.5 in spikes. So if any of those arrive, let me know.
Yeah, I'm not going to be wearing spikes anytime soon, I don't think. You'd be welcome to them. But anyway, who's going next? Is it going to be Ben?
Yeah, then, Ben. I'm happy to go next. I don't really know where to start, to be honest. It's a bit of a contrast to Tom's stories over the last few weeks. I've probably had two of the best weeks of training of my life, period. But I don't know. Feels like I'm going to be sitting here bragging for the next 20-30 minutes compared to Tom's, but I guess I should probably jump into it. Where shall I start? Monday this week or Monday 2 weeks ago?
Oh, just do last week, I reckon. But if there's any great stories from the first week, just mix them in.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Let's do that the last week, the last full week, and then you can finish with just like a general summary of Kenya in a nutshell.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I've got a few questions en route as well, so.
Did you hear that at all?
No.
No, thank God that didn't end the call. I've pressed hang up. Anyway, ignore that. I'm gonna jump in with week two, regardless of what you just said, because I've had some pretty good sessions while I was over there and I wanted to touch on them. Some of them are pretty unique. So we'll start with like the first proper session I did at altitude, which was about 6 or 7 days in. And it was a fartlek session on the Wednesday morning. We went down to the local fartlek in Iten, where basically around 100 to 150 Kenyan runners will meet up every week to go for a fartlek. Now, a few people have said that this isn't really a fartlek, and I kind of understand where they're coming from, because the workout was 11 by 3 minutes with 1 minute jog. So it's not technically a speed play in terms of the duration of the intervals doesn't change, but each week they change the duration of the interval. So 1 week it will be 3-1, another week it'll be 2-1, and then another week it'll be 1-1, and then they'll go back to 3-1, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, makes sense.
So the week I went down there, it was a 3-1 workout. So you run around pretty much 90-95% effort for these intervals, and then the 1 minute are floats. So yeah, it's a pretty intense workout, and we started this one at 9 o'clock. So by this time in the day, it's getting pretty hot. I think peak temperature in the day is around 28-29 degrees. So it was getting pretty hot towards the end, and I actually think I got a little bit of mild heat stroke from this session. But despite that, it was a wicked experience, like on the dirt tracks, all these amazing runners surrounding you. I think I managed to keep up with like one or two Kenyan runners. The rest of them just disappeared into the sunrise over the hills. And interestingly, they do all these type fartlek workouts on like the most challenging of terrains, like proper uneven dirt, really, really undulating. I think at the start of this run, we actually ran downhill for 3 kilometers to get to the start. And then it basically starts at the bottom of the hill and you run back into a 10. So yeah, that was the first sort of workout, and it was pretty intense. 16 kilometers in total. Average pace is only 4:43 per kilometer, including warm up and cool down. But yeah, it was hard work, and definitely felt that one the next day.
Was there any, just before you move on, was there any like prescribed pace with this, or was it just like run hard? Were you even looking at your watch, Ben, or were you just going with the flow?
Yeah, to be honest with you, we had a coach for this whole like experience. So yeah, for a bit more context, I went out with a company called Running Trips, and they put on a 2-week camp called the Kenya Experience, basically. And it's mainly for people to go out to attend, to experience the Kenyan like ways of training, what they eat, all that side of things. So we did have a coach for this program who's a Kenyan coach who coaches a lot of athletes in the Iten area. And he literally said at the start of the workout that it's a 95% effort. It's basically race pace effort. And this seems to be how Kenyans do their sessions. It's like very much max effort until you fall off the rails, basically, which is completely different to what I usually do, obviously, with my threshold stuff. Very controlled. The Kenyans just absolutely go for it until they blow up, basically. So yeah, it was a mental session. And in the afternoon, it felt like I'd basically like done a half marathon effort type thing in terms of how fatigued I was. But then that's kind of reflected in the next day and the days after. They focus on like their recovery running is like super, super slow, considering some of these guys like run 2:10 for the marathon. They're doing their easy runs at like 5:30 per K, which is really unusual, because obviously even for people of my standard, sort of 2:30 marathoners, I do my easy runs at least a minute quicker than that. So they do their hard days super hard, and then their recovery and easy running a lot easier than I've experienced anyway. So that was a main takeaway from that workout. Just trying to think of...
And I think the thing to like caveat this with is like the experience you've had is really unique, in the sense of like, obviously you've been taken out there on a trip, and basically the idea is to squeeze in as much of the Kenyan culture and kind of running culture into the 14 days that you're there, I guess. Like, correct me if I'm wrong at any time. So like, from what I saw when I was watching your videos, which I think were great, were like all the things you got up to. It was like jam-packed days with doing this, doing that. And I guess the way they structure it is you arrive on day one, and whether you are like in tip-top shape or you're literally, you've jogged, you know, like once a week for your whole life, then
there's something for everyone.
You still... Well, what I mean is like they still want to give you a sample of everything. So you'll still do a version of the fartlek, right? Like a version of an easy run, a version of a longer run, that kind of thing. So the session that you went down to, I'd be interested to know, and you know, it's probably impossible to ask, like, of those guys doing 3 minutes at 95% effort with 1 minute recovery, like what stage they were at in their training. Do you see what I mean? And I'm guessing a lot of them will be at different stages and stuff, because like that's not a sensible thing to do. Do you know what I mean? As the average punter, to go out there and after 7 days do a 33 minutes of work at 95%, you'd think, whoa, like, you know,
that's pretty extreme.
But for all we know, like those top guys in that group were, you know, 3 weeks out from a goal race or whatever. So it's interesting to, it would be interesting to know like, where they stood with it, because a lot of the stuff that people will see you do will think like, you know, that seems pretty extreme.
Yeah. And just for a bit more context with that fartlek we did, I was speaking to some of the athletes before we we got going, and the front pack, they were all like sub 60 half marathon runners, which was just mad to think. And just to see them like run off into the distance after the first rep was like mad. Like, I've never seen that before in a workout, someone be able to run away from me, like not being big headed or anything like that. Like, usually I go along to a session and I'm a fairly decent runner, but there I literally felt like a complete novice. And like, there was people that were definitely a lot slower than I was. And I was probably the only one on the whole like Kenya experience, if you like, that was able to complete and do the session. Everyone else sort of had to just adapt it because it was such an intense sort of situation to be thrown into. But in terms of the experience, it was incredible to be a part of. And if I go back to a 10, I'll definitely go along to more Wednesday fartleks. And yeah, like I said, they change every week in terms of the duration. So I'm pretty sure that's a pretty standard little thing they do. They all meet together and then get the fartlek done. Even though they're obviously going to be doing it at different paces, they all do the same sort of workout duration, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But the only other run to mention in sort of the first week of training was the first long run I did. So that was on the Saturday in Kenya. Pretty much all athletes take Sunday as a complete rest day. That's the day they go to church, or if they're in a training camp, which a lot of them do, they go home on the Sunday as a bit of a reset, look after the children, go to see the family, take the kids out for the day, that sort of thing. So Sunday is a complete rest day. But on the Saturday, I jumped in with a Finnish marathon runner. Her name was Nina. And she was literally staying in the room next to me in the high altitude training center, which is probably one of the best things about where I stayed. Is this center is literally jam packed with top level runners. So Nina was obviously one of them. We had like the Polish national team, I think more middle distance runners. So you'd have probably got on quite well with them, Callum. Like 800, 1500 meter guys and girls were staying there, getting ready for. What competition would it have been? Probably like Europeans or something like that.
You'll be this summer, yeah. It's World Championships, isn't
World
it?
Champs, yeah, something like that. But this place had loads and loads of like top level athletes that would be more than happy to have you like join their sessions or like go out for easy runs with them. Nina would like knock on my door when she was going down to the gym to do her like stretches before a run, which obviously I would never normally do. But because I was surrounded by athletes of that caliber, I found myself doing all this stuff that I never normally would do in terms of like recovery, preparation, just thinking about training as a whole rather than just the actual running, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's also really nice that despite... I wasn't sure if you're going away with a trip like this where it's like an experiential thing, right? Like you see it all the time. People are going on these safaris and then they're whisked back to their five-star hotel afterwards. They're not actually going to camp out in that habitat. What sounds really nice about this is the fact that you were able to immerse yourself. You weren't just there with a bunch of people who have got, let's be honest, the disposable income to be able to go on a trip like this. You're there with, you know, real people who live there,
yeah,
24/7, and like athletes who are coming over from Europe and wherever to train. That's that's really cool.
Probably was one of the best bits about the trip is that the camp is put on by two guys from the UK. Like they own the company, but they don't actually go out with like the camp, if that makes sense. The whole Kenya experience, if you like, is run by Kenyan coaches, Kenyan athletes. For every run in our program, we had about 10 to 15 paces, they call them, basically people that come along, guide runners, take you out on the trails. They run to your individual pace. So there'll be a guy who would go with me pretty much every day. And he'd stick with my group. There's probably like three or four guys of my ability. So when we did a session, we'd always have a Kenyan pacer with us. And then the same for all the other groups that were on the trip. The head coach was a Kenyan. The chefs are all Kenyan. Like it's very much as close to the real, like authentic experience as you're going to get rather than being put on by some white guys, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I wasn't going to quite say it so bluntly, but that's exactly what I was getting at. It's not just like a sheltered trip and then come along, guys, let's hurry you back to your accommodation.
Yeah.
It seems like you've got to really experience it, which is, really cool.
Yeah. And obviously, because there's always people out there on the internet that want to criticize you, it is obviously worth caveating again that you did stay in like a pretty premium place relative to like the living standard of people there. So we're not at all saying like, oh, Ben lived and ate exactly like a Kenyan did for 2 weeks. But
no, not at all.
What we're saying is that he got a bit more of a mix of being able to be around local people, support the local economy by going and buying X, Y, and Z in different shops and cafes and stuff like that. But like, you fully understand your position of privilege of like staying in a very safe Wi-Fi, you know, pool, sauna, gym, like kind of you stayed in a training facility because you were there to train. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's why you went. So you're well within your act to do that. Just wanted to say that because there'll be people that are definitely like, oh, Ben got it for free and he's, you know, pretending that he was living in a tent.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, definitely. The sort of the facility we stayed in is completely like the opposite of what the Kenyan athletes and even the top level runners are sort of staying in and the facilities they have access to. Like, I don't deny that at all. But in terms of the actual experience, the running, like we got to go along to a lot of like local group runs that were already happening. And it was just a case of like adapting them so that we could join in, if that makes sense. And they were very, very like all the Kenyan runners were super like welcoming of like foreigners basically. I thought there might be a little bit of like not conflict, but I thought maybe there would be a bit of like hostility of like you going along to somebody else's running club and then doing their workout type thing. But they were super, super welcoming. Like everyone wanted to talk to you. Like it seemed like everyone wanted to become like your mate even. So felt very safe when I was over there. But I'll start with the second week of training, because that was the first week, just a fartlek and a decent long run with Nina on the Saturday. Then we took the Sunday as a complete rest day. So I will start with Monday. I'll try and go through things quite quickly because you don't want to hear all about every single run. Otherwise we'll be here for too long. But on Monday it was a 70 minute easy run. And with easy running in Kenya, this is just from my personal experience, it seems that everything starts off slow and ends a little bit progressive. So easy runs for the local Kenyans will start around 5 minutes per kilometer and they'll finish at like 3:50 per kilometer. So they're always progressive, but they're still classed as an easy run category, which is a little bit different to how I would usually do my easy runs. So that was Monday. And then in Monday evening, we did a bit of a Kenyan Hill session. So it was mainly just an easy run again. And the purpose of this session was to get us ready for the workout, which was the following day. So it's kind of like hill strides type thing. The intensity of the workout, if you like, was a lot lower than a session was. So the evening run was 5 miles, 8.05 kilometers at 5:05 per kilometer with 15 minutes continuous hills. And then on Monday evening, straight after the hill session, we did a core workout. And when I was there, I did 4 core workouts in total. And I've never experienced anything as brutal as these workouts. I don't know if you guys train like abdominals that much, but this class was like literally 40 minutes, 45 minutes of intense back-to-back core exercises. And I just wasn't ready for it. And I don't think many people were. And again, the good thing about these classes is that they were the classes that are put on for the elite athletes. So you go along to this core session in the gym, and there's probably about 30 to 40 professional Kenyan runners doing the same workout as you. And it was quite interesting to see that they were also struggling by the exercises. I think they were pretty intense for anyone. They completely ruined me. And I've since added a core session into my training plan for the next few weeks to sort of build up my core strength, because that's definitely an area of weakness. But moving on to Tuesday, which was our first proper track session, we went down to the Kipchoge track, which is an incredible experience. I have never seen so many runners use an athletics track at the same time, but it kind of worked. Like, it was organized chaos. Everyone just sort of ran in a straight line. You had to run behind the person in front of you, and then the faster runners would just come around the outside of you. And this track was just full of just insane runners. Like, Kelvin Kipton was there at the same time. He's the like third fastest man ever for the marathon. You had like Tedesco Abraham, the Swiss national record holder, Simon Buch, the German runner was there that runs for ASICS. Just there was loads and loads of runners all at like the top level of the game, just running around the track whilst you were trying to do your workout as well, which is, yeah, it was pretty incredible. And the workout was again set by Coach Richard, the coach for the 2 weeks. And again, it was adapted for ability. So he set me and two other guys, Kush and Sven, 10 by a kilometer with 200 meter jog recoveries. And in terms of the workout, I think I executed this one pretty well because I was conscious of the altitude. It makes it a lot harder to breathe and it's hard to judge your effort. So we started at around, I think the first five reps I did was around 320 per kilometer, which at altitude, I've used an altitude calculator and take with it what you want, but it's around 313 per kilometer in translation. So we started off fairly comfortably. And then towards the end, the last five, I sort of picked it up. So I think if I looked at the splits, it went like 320s for the first five, then 315, then 312, then 310, then 36. And then I finished the last rep with a 302. So I was pretty chuffed with that session. Nice to go through the gears a little bit. And I like to do those type of sessions progressive. So yeah, felt amazing. Left the track feeling like I'd just done a race, like that sort of same elation you have in terms of you come away from the track and you just feel like, wow, that wasn't such an experience. Like, I don't know. It was definitely up there with one of the best training runs I've ever done. And I think I'll remember it for a long, long time.
Good stuff. Yeah. Good session.
Yeah. Again, it's just one of them where it's so nice that we must have seen hundreds of thousands of videos on Instagram at this track.
Mm.
So for you to have actually been there, like feet on the ground and done a solid session around there is, yeah, like you say, it's stuff for the grandkids, isn't it? That
definitely is. And so much so, I actually went back the next morning. Ross Braden and Mo Adan were doing a session the next day. They actually had 10 by K on the Wednesday, but it just didn't work out with our schedules. If not, I would have definitely jumped. I'd have tried to jump in with them anyway. But I went down to the track the next day and basically took some photo and videos for those guys and just did a bit of a recovery run myself. So the next day was just 8 kilometers of running. Was it 8 kilometers? 7 kilometers of just easy running around the track with Mo and Ross, just while they did their warm up and cool down. And then in the afternoon, we went to St. Patrick's School, which is they said if a 10 is the home of the champions, then St. Patrick's School is like the kitchen. It's where all the talent is nurtured. David Rudisha went to that school. There's been 12 world record holders go through the ranks since like the 1960s. So it was like, yeah, it's a pretty, again, surreal but super special experience to go down to the school and see where the likes of Rudisha started their journey, if you know what I mean. And that was pretty special. Then moving on, what was the next session? So that was our main session was on Tuesday, the 10 by K. And then on the Thursday, we did a long run, which is not traditional in the Kenyan sort of running schedule. It's just that the majority of people were going home on the Saturday. So instead of doing the long run on the Saturday, we moved it to Thursday. And we went down to the Moy Ben. We didn't actually run on Moy Ben Road, which is a bit of a shame. But apparently it's a little bit, there's quite a lot of traffic on the road. And for a group of our size, there's probably about 20 of us, maybe 30 of us, including the pacers. Apparently it's a little bit on the dangerous side. So we actually used the road that's parallel to Moy Ben Road. And the long run I did was 25 kilometers at 3:48 per kilometer. I was hoping, I'm not going to lie, to average a little bit faster than that, a bit closer to marathon pace. But my legs from the start of this one were pretty tired. Obviously that Tuesday session was still in the legs. I think I can remember getting in about 8K into this run and thinking, bloody hell, I feel tired today. Like breathing and heart rate was actually pretty good, under control, but my legs were just knackered. But it was still good to get 25K done in the Moy Ben area. Again, filmed it for YouTube, just like every day out in Kenya. So if you want to go check out any of these runs, like more specifically, then there's a YouTube video for each one. Little subtle plug there. But yeah, altitude just makes running at high intensity like this for that period of time so much harder than at sea level. You can kind of get away with it for like short interval stuff. You don't really notice it, but it's when you do the longer periods of intensity that you really notice, like, it's just impossible to get the oxygen into your body and recover throughout the workout. So yeah, it was pretty humbling. The hills again in Kenya make it really tough as well. But yeah, good to bank a solid long run while I was over there, get a feel for it in the Moy Bend area. And that is pretty much it in terms of the key sessions that we did while we were over there. Finished with a bit of a 70 minutes easy run on the Saturday morning. And we finished that run with Dennis Cometto, who, he used to be the world record holder before Kipchoge came along, basically. And he's the only man on the planet, apparently, to run sub-2:3 in non-carbon plated shoes, which is pretty unreal to meet somebody of that caliber. He's 40 years old now, but he's still training. I think he's still got he had a marathon planned, but I can't remember which one it was. But it's just the caliber of athlete in Iten is just crazy. I think on that last run as well, Petros, the German national record holder, came past us a couple of times. He's a lot shorter in real life than I thought he was. He's shorter than me, I think. I think he must be about 5'9".
Is he?
Yeah, he looks really tall, doesn't he?
You see him on Instagram.
Yeah. But no, he's not as tall as he looks.
He's an animal, by the way.
How many miles did you do, Ben, then?
So in the second week, I ran 131K. And on the first week, I ran 120K. So pretty solid couple of weeks. I didn't want to overdo it because I'm still coming off the back of Osaka. So after Osaka, I took a week off. Then the first week back, I ran 120. Then the second week, I ran 135-ish. So yeah, nice little build. Good kickstart to the Boston Marathon prep. Hoping to run around 150, 160 this week.
And do you have a targeting goal in mind for Boston yet, or what?
It's a tough one, really. I'd love to go there and get a PB, but from speaking to a few people in Kenya, actually, the course is just like...
Yeah, the course is savage, yeah.
Not set out for a PB. So if I got close to my PB in Boston, I'd have a good run. But I reckon it's going to be probably around 2:30 will be realistic.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, it's interesting, the Kenya thing, because over the last few years, I've seen it from so many different angles, even just like speaking to people that have been, or, you know, when you see on Instagram, you see very different experiences that people have as more Brits and Europeans go over, and whether they're kind of doing the exact same training they do at home, but they're just doing it to get the altitude benefits, whether, you know, they're staying in rented accommodation or whatever it is. And then obviously having the experience of living with some Kenyans when I was in America that we had in our team, and like understanding more of the culture and like how it was so different to how the American system was, and kind of the clashes that appeared. It does basically boil down, I think, similar to like the Japanese model, where yes, there is like the genetic and like the altitude type benefits, but ultimately it's like something within the culture that is why they managed to breed runners of such a high caliber and such a depth. It very much is like, you know, how central running is and their understanding of running, I think, that is, you know, what seems to set them apart anyway, which is why I find it so frustrating that Kenya has such a horrific like doping record at the moment, and why it is like a red list country, and why, you know, I feel bad that I have to look at every performance and think, that seems a little bit dodgy.
Yeah.
Because you meet people on the ground that are the smiliest, happiest, loveliest people that are just trying to run to get out of their situation and, you know, go turn up day in, day out to give it their best. But it's so overshadowed by what you see on the world stage with the doping and stuff. So it seems like a real shame.
Yeah. For me, one of the biggest takeaways from being out there in Kenya and like experiencing it with proper Kenyan athletes that are basically trying to make it is the reason why they run. It's literally to try and get out of their impoverished situation that they're in, to try and provide for their family, to try and bring up their like immediate and close family around them. They have no other option really than to try and become either... You've got basically two options. You go to school, get an education and try and get a decent job, but the chances of that is pretty slim. Or you try and dedicate your like teenage and early 20 years to trying to become a professional runner. And as soon as you win a race, you've basically paid for your entire family's like a house, food, schools, everything for like lifetime almost. So it's almost like they are running out of desperation to leave their poverty that they're in. So when it comes to these like fartlek sessions, there's runners that go along and they will literally try to keep up with the front group until they physically cannot keep up anymore. Like they just have to try and become a world champion, or like they have to try and get to the level where they can win races in Europe in order to try and fund their families. So it's completely different.
Or even like just get to a level where you can get a scholarship to the US,
because
you know, some of the guys that we had on our team, you know, obviously they really liked running and stuff like that, but they were in America for 4 years, and the how much the dollar is worth compared to their cost of living, they just had on campus jobs, which is allowed within your visa restrictions. You're allowed to work something like 10 or 12 hours a week in like the, you know, not the kitchen, but you know what I mean, like the kiosk type thing, or like this the college shop,
student
or
union type thing,
exactly like those equivalents. Yeah, and if you're earning whatever the minimum wage is in that state, $14, $15 an hour, you know, Ezra, who was, he ran 28:40 when I was there, really really good runner. He had built a house in Kenya by the time he'd left. He was just sending money back, and it has a property. So when he graduates and decides to go back to Kenya, you know, he's just reinvesting back to, you know, where he's from. So it's not even a case that you need to become an Olympian or a world champion. If you can just get to a level where it gives you some escape, then
100%. But no, the whole thing was pretty damn incredible. I'm already planning a return. I think I'm going to try and do a 4 or 5 week camp towards the end of the year, maybe before another marathon. I'm planning to do probably a marathon at the end of October, start of November. So I'm thinking of doing about a month in a 10 before that marathon. So if anyone fancies a bit of altitude training, chaps, have to come out there.
I've got an ungodly amount of annual leave to take because I really didn't take any holiday last year.
Oh, yeah.
So it's all...
Then you're coming with me, mate.
Yeah, I would be unbelievably tempted to just go, because you can work there, right? Like the time difference isn't that bad. The Wi-Fi seems okay. And you've got so much free time that you could feasibly work from Kenya.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually surprising the amount of athletes that are there with jobs. Like a lot of the Polish national team still had like their day jobs. They were sitting around the pool doing whatever they were on their laptops, and in like the communal areas, just sitting there, I don't know, on emails. So you can definitely still get work done out there. But obviously, if you want to experience the full like Kenyan life, you wouldn't do your day job while you're there. But if you fancy a couple of weeks at the same time as that I'm out there, then that would be wicked if we could hook that up.
Wouldn't do a couple of weeks. I'd do the full whack.
Don't do it half-heartedly. No. Yeah, well, I mean, if you can get time off work, then 100% gotta do it.
What's your time frame? When were you thinking of doing it?
Probably October, November.
Okay, interesting. Yeah.
And maybe, and if that doesn't work out, then I'll do one in either December or January.
And if any listeners want to go out, we've just started a new business called Running Trips Unofficial. And all you do is, we're actually £200 cheaper than our competitors that you may have heard of, Running Trips Official. And you can get an extra 2% discount when you prove that you've rated the Spotify the podcast on Spotify.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And we take payment just straight to PayPal, so you don't have to worry about anything like that.
Yeah, it's just friends and family payment, £2,000, everything included. Just make sure that you put the security card and the full print number in the description, because that's pretty important for us to identify who you are.
Lovely stuff. Well, Callum, do you want to talk us through what you've been up to in the last couple of weeks?
Yes, indeed.
I actually have some terrible news.
You've got to go, haven't you?
I think I've got to go back to work. I might have to miss Callum's week in the listener questions, which is actually, like, I'm actually quite upset about that. Because I was looking forward to hearing what you've been up to, Callum.
That's all right, mate. That's all right.
Neither of you boys are in London or anything this week, are you?
I am on Thursday with you, mate.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I'm in London tomorrow, yes, mate.
Oh, yeah, what are you doing?
I'm doing some filming for various bits and bobs.
Okay, well, man in demand. All right. Well, I'm there tomorrow. So if you're about in the evening, we'll try and have a catch up then.
Yep. I don't think I'm actually going to be there in the evening, but if I decide to, then I will let you know, mate.
Yeah. Lovely.
Sounds good. Thanks for joining us, Tom.
That's all right. Sorry for dipping early.
No worries.
We'll back properly next week for a more normal episode, hopefully.
Look forward to hearing all about the Lycra.
Yeah, stop it.
Don't go spending too much money on a new bike either.
No, do you know what? So far, all I can conclude is Cloud Monsters, fucking terrible on a bicycle. Puma Forever on Nitro, surprisingly all right on a bike.
Oh, interesting. So,
yeah, follow along on Strava for more running shoe reviews in relation to how they perform on a bike.
Surely you're wearing Vaporflies on the bike, no? So you go faster.
Do you know what? I was actually
carbon plate only
to wear an old pair of Vaporflies on the bike the other day. But I thought if anybody sees me who knows about bikes and or running, then I'm just going to look like an idiot. So I'm trying to be as discreet as possible with my cycling endeavours.
Yeah. Right. Well, Tom, thank you very much, mate.
Yeah. Cheers, Tom. Speak to you soon.
Anyone that is still listening, because Tom wasn't your favourite and you want to stay, we do have some listener questions and results and stuff, so stay with us.
Oh, stop it. I'm the LVP of this podcast. Especially at the moment.
That's class.
Right. Peace and love, boys. I'll see you soon.
All right. See you soon, mate.
See you soon, bud.
Love you. Bye.
Love you too, mate. Bye.
As he left the call, he has. Cool. Right, I'll go through my week then, Ben, just for you. A little private viewing you've got here.
Lovely stuff.
So Monday, I did 8 miles at 6:48 per mile, and that was with 5 short hills as well, which I actually did on the treadmill afterwards, so that's not included in the 8 miles. I basically
it's
did these...
It's a bit
of
a crime for you, isn't it?
Yeah, I basically did them on the treadmill because where I live, if...
Come on, try and justify it.
If I want to go to a hill that's steep enough to make these hills worth it, then I have to do them I have to make my route all around that. And I have to also do them in the middle. And these are best done post run My coach wants me to have, it's basically quite a neuromuscular thing. So it's not an aerobic stride. So you want to have like 2 or 3 minutes full rest in between. So it kind of disrupts your run if you do them in the middle. So, yeah, I literally stopped my run, had to go to the gym anyway. So, just did these on the treadmill. And they're just 12 seconds, sprint up, and then, take 2 or 3 minutes. Easy.
Sort of pace do you put a treadmill on it for those?
I just put the treadmill on whatever the maximum was, and I put it on like 8% incline or something like that. Jeez. I don't actually know what the treadmill goes up to, but you got to remember it's 12 seconds
intense.
It's 12 seconds on, and then you get 3 minutes rest. So that's like, You have to go full blast basically to make it worth it.
Have you done anything like that before, or is this like a new thing?
I once did a hill session on the treadmill when I was in America when we had really bad snow. And it isn't, I'm not saying it isn't as effective. Obviously, it's more boring and stuff like that. You can control the incline and obviously like the time that you're running up the hill. But I still think that the belt moving beneath you, you don't recruit the same muscle fibers as if you're gonna just go up, if you're pushing yourself up the hill, you see what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And as you like this week when I did them, look, where I was running was different. I had a hill available at the end of the run, so I just did them then. Tuesday I had a group session. I'd had 200s, so I had 3 sets of 8 200s with 100 meters jog recovery. So 200s in 30-31 seconds, and
that
then 100 meters in around 45 seconds, and then 3 minutes between the sets. So that was kind of just like 2.5 minutes of jogging, 30 seconds of standing around. At one point I randomly did a 300. I kind of like, it's so many reps that my mind was just wandering kind of thing, and I didn't realize where I'd started. I was confused with the lines, so I ended up doing 300.
The lactic headache kicked in.
Not a bit of lactic, but it's only a 200 rep, and like 30 to 31 obviously is relatively
mile
fast
pace.
But yeah, exactly, it's relatively fast, but like if you can run a full mile at that pace, well, quicker than that pace, then you should be able to do a 200, a lot of 200s basically. And the 100 meter jog in between is like a crawl, do you know what I mean? It's like 45 seconds, so it's not a fast jog. So yeah, that was a good session actually.
I'd love to have a go at something like that. Never done anything like that.
around 5 miles of work, obviously plus warm up and cool down as well onto that. And we had a good group for that as well, actually. A guy in our group, Ian, is racing. What date are we on now? He's racing this weekend at the World Masters Indoor Champs.
Oh, cool.
He's doing the 3K indoors, so it was good for him, a good session for him to kind of sharpen up a little bit, because he won't need to run that fast.
Yeah.
When it comes to the World Masters. So I don't know if Ian listens, but if you do, Ian, good luck, mate. Well, I'll see you tonight as well, but can say it in person. Yeah, so that was Tuesday. Wednesday was just another easy run. It was 8.5 miles at 6:38. Pretty standard, to be honest, on a Wednesday. Just get out. It's always between 8 or 9 miles or 8 and 10 miles. Nice and easy. What I have been finding is, I think it's just my fitness and kind of my strength coming back, but all my easy runs are just naturally getting quicker. I never look at my watch. If I need to take it easy, I take it easy. You know, I think later in this week I have a run where I do it at 8:30 per mile or 9 minutes per mile. So I literally just run to however I'm feeling. But yeah, I always notice it's a good sign that in the last couple of miles, my body's naturally picking it up as I warm up into the run. And that's always kind of a sign that I'm feeling pretty fit.
Yeah, that's a good sign, especially after a session day. That's not always how it happens. So yeah, you must be coming into some fitness, hopefully.
And all of these sessions are all like I should be finishing them all like I could do more. None of them should be hands on knees sessions. Like I think if you finish every session, and this is just my opinion, if you finish every session like hands on knees blowing, or like people where they sprint and fire as they can, it's kind of like, that's what race day's for. In order to stack all the weeks sustainably on top of each other, I think you need to just work within your means. So yeah, this session, yes, my calves were feeling it a bit the day after because I'd done, you know, 24 200s, but it wasn't anything. It wasn't like the feeling that you get after a race or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's Wednesday done. Thursday was a slightly different this week. Because I was traveling down to Devon on the Friday, I couldn't actually do my session. So I moved it to Thursday. So only one day recovery between sessions, which I don't normally do, but it wasn't too bad, to be honest. And this was basically a threshold session with some slightly quicker than threshold. So it was 2 mile, 1 mile, 2 mile, 1 mile, and then 5 200s at the end. So the 2 miles I did in about just quicker than five minute miling. Pace. Yeah. And then the miles I did in 4:43, 4:44. So that's, you know, like
2:55.
Yeah, a bit quicker than threshold. Yeah, with 2 minutes in between those reps, and then I had 5 200s at the end that were in 28:29 seconds. So
a bit faster than your 24 200s.
Yeah, a bit faster than that. And this was a great session by myself on the track. There's a couple of other people there, but just doing sprints and different kind of things like that. So I had a bit of company, but it was solo. Bit of wind. Can't really think of any other excuses, but yeah, it was a really good session, actually. These longer ones are always a bit of a chore to get done, to be honest, or long for me for the training that I'm doing. So
it's interesting that you've got like long reps, threshold reps, and intensity in the same workout.
Yeah, so I'll always finish every session with something quicker now, because ultimately I'm trying to run a fast 1500. So similar with the 200s, it's like economy work for the pace, or similar to the pace that I'm going to be running. It's all about leg turnover. So I need to be strong, hence why I've got the 2 miles and the 1 miles, and the miles a bit quicker than threshold, the twos having to settle back in. But yeah, always finishing with something a bit faster, because that's what my body needs to learn to do, to be honest. It needs to be able to run fast when my legs are tired.
Yeah.
So at the end of 45 minutes of running, to do those is pretty solid.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so that was a good session, actually. And then Friday, I like I said, I was driving down to Devon in the morning, so I had to get this one done pretty early. I ran with my girlfriend, Alice, just did 10K, well, 6.21 miles, which I think
9.99.
Yeah, 9.99K at 8:35 a mile. So yeah, super easy. Recovery, time on feet, just chatting, nothing to really think about, to be honest. Most weeks I have at least one of these runs, especially when I start doubling. Normally a couple of my doubles are with Alice, where I run, you know, significantly slower than I normally would, but it's really good for my recovery and to make sure that I'm like doing stuff in a low heart rate. Not that I look at my heart rate, but you just know that you're not working as hard. Which I found helpful. Saturday I was down in Devon. I did my long run, which was only 11.5 miles this week. 11.47 at 6:41 per mile.
What were you doing down in Devon?
I was just away for the weekend. Just little getaway with Alice and her family, just a few walks, bit of good food, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing too wild or crazy, but it's quite hilly where we normally stay in this forest. So it was good to get a bit of added elevation. I can't actually see what my elevation is, but I could see that it was hilly with my eyes. So yeah, that was Saturday. And then Sunday I just had a super easy 5 miles, 5.04 at 6:45 a mile, so 35 minutes. Just easy shakeout to finish the week. And finished bang on 60.01 actually, I think, miles, which wasn't intended. I didn't look at what I needed to get. So yeah, another nice step up. And this week will be a bit more volume and then a bit more volume after that. So yeah, gradually building it up. Two good sessions, kind of the ideal week on paper, really. So
yeah, it looked like a good couple of sessions.
Yeah, the other thing to note is I never talk about like my strength work or anything on this, but the last few weeks I've been going to the gym 3 times a week. So kind of the last 2 weeks now I've had 3 S&C sessions a week. This week I'll be back to just doing 2. Now my session intensity is up. Yeah. But it means that I've kind of been doing quite a lot of load, even though the mileage has not been super high.
Yeah.
Having a lot more plyometric based stuff, a lot of heavier stuff as I try and, you know, get a bit more powerful for the summer. So yeah, it's all in moving in the right direction with training right now. I've got no appetite to race, to be honest. Like, I've seen all the races going on and I've not really been thinking, oh, I wish I was racing. I've been pretty glad just to get my head down with training, not have to worry about my legs feeling fresh, etc. And, you know, enjoy just putting some sessions together. So it's been quite nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds like a good week. Should we move on to a bit of running news?
Yeah, let's do some running news. It's probably worth, we've down here that obviously the episode we missed last week, we were going to cover various results. So rather than go through them all, we'll just pick out a couple of the important ones. So there was basically the Intercounties Cross, which is the final of the British Cross Challenge. So you had the series of Cardiff, Milton Keynes, Liverpool, Perth, and then it finishes up at Loughborough. Mohamed won that, who has signed with Puma. But the reason I wanted to mention it, to be honest, is because Jack Gray came third from Cambridge, which is a great result for him.
Yeah, great run, mate.
And Grace Carson, she took the win in the females.
Not heard that name before.
Grace Carson, yeah, lovely, lovely girl, Grace. I went to European Champs with her in December. Yeah, great, great runner. And she beat Gemma Steele, I believe, who came second. And if anyone knows anything about running, then you'll know the name Gemma Steele because she's bloody good at cross country. So
yeah,
that was great. Grace is only, I think she might be a little bit younger than me, so 22, 23, something like that, maybe even a bit younger. So great, a great result.
Big win.
Yeah. It was also the French national cross country, which the only reason we wrote this down, to be honest, is because Jimmy Gressier ate what I could only think is a crepe.
Yeah, I think it was.
When he's crossing the line. And I wrote this down because I don't actually think, I'm not sure if that would be allowed. Because you know what British officials are like, especially
yeah,
the old
you'd
people.
Been disqualified, 100%.
I'm sure they would disqualify you. So if anyone has an opinion on that, or if you're an official that's listening, would you take action if I was winning a race and I decided to get given a crepe and eat it as I walk across the line, or any food, to be honest.
Yeah, that is really interesting. I reckon in any other race, he would be disqualified.
Do you think?
Because that's like getting assistance, isn't it?
Yeah, but,
I know he's doing it for the rule.
I don't know what the rule is, though. Like, would you be allowed to get given a gel at cross country?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I actually don't know, you know? Like, in British cross country, that you definitely wouldn't get disqualified if, like, if Mohamed's winning and his coach passes him a gel, I don't think anyone would bat an eyelid. They'd just be like, oh, Mohamed's having a gel in the race, you know?
Yeah.
But if he ate a Yorkshire pudding when he crossed the line, would the officials say, oh, that's a bit, you know, that's like excessive showboating? Or
yeah,
is it,
in America, you get disqualified, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't
really
know.
You're not even allowed to swear as you go across the line, are you, or something like that?
No, you get in trouble. Spitting as well, that's not allowed in Britain anymore. Can't spit.
No spitting.
Which in a race is pretty wild, isn't it? Ben, any other results you wanted to go through?
Not really from last week. Obviously, this week we had some pretty impressive results for the men's 5K. Mm-hmm. How do you say that name?
Kjelcha.
Yeah, the Ethiopian Adidas runner ran 12:50, which was, yeah, ridiculous. Second slower than the world record. And then Sam... Sat Atkins here, Sam Atkins, run a new British 5K road record as well. And he ran 13:12, which I think was 8 seconds quicker than Mark Scott's 13:20.
Yeah, Mark ran at that podium, yeah, a few years ago. I think it was 2019 or 2020. It was in COVID, I think, when he ran that. But yeah, that's an amazing run from Sam Atkins. But it's
phenomenal, you know, yeah.
We've talked about various of his runs on the podcast, and every time I say, hopefully it materializes into him not DNFing in whatever championship he qualifies for, because when you've got someone running times that could make him be a serious challenger at European and, you know, almost at world events, it's a shame to see him not follow through with it. So I know it's easy for me to sit here and say, you know, finish a race in 13:12, because I'm not the one that's ever going to do that, but hopefully he can actually turn it into some kind of medal, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, 100%.
And there was a New York half as well, which was pretty loaded actually with not necessarily the best runners in the world, but it was loaded with kind of faces from the running world, if you know what I mean. Tinman Elite had a few people in there, you know, like various brands and kind of, you know, people had somebody representing them, which I thought was quite good because New York is a pretty iconic event. I know the marathon is way more iconic than the half, but just running through Central Park and the streets of New York, it's good to get, you know, a proper good field out.
Yeah, 100%.
Which was good. And Helen O'Beery won the women's. She's with On, right, I think?
Yeah, she was wearing a new pair of On shoes as well, actually, which is interesting. Yeah,
and speaking of On shoes, I wish Tom was here for this, but have you seen the triathlon shoe?
No.
Do you see that? You have to go on Trackster's Instagram now while I go through the other results and have a look at the post that they put on, because apparently there's a few of the people that were running for On have been wearing this triathlon shoe, and the only reason they know it's triathlon shoes is because it says tri on the side.
Okay.
But it looks pretty cool. In the men's, Jacob Kiplimo took the win. I think he won by a fair margin in the end. I think it was
over a minute.
Yeah. No, it wasn't a minute, was it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he beat Cheptegei by about at least 50 seconds anyway.
Was it? Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, a great result there. And you've written something here about some new Moroccan kid. What's this about?
Yeah, so the guy came third was called Zuha Talibi, and a name I'd not heard of. And he seemed to be competing with Kiplimo and Cheptegei until the like dying stage of the race, which I thought was pretty impressive to see. And I saw an interview with him afterwards, and he was basically saying he's had an injury for a long period of time, and he's come back, and now he's finally at the sort of point where he wants to be and where he sees his training has put him. So yeah, it was good to see a new face. Well, new to me anyway. I think he was a A6 athlete. But I think that might have been a case of the race actually was pretty tactical and it wasn't so fast. So maybe there was a newer face on the podium there. But good to see an up and coming runner in the mix as well, especially with the likes of Kiplimo and Cheptegei.
Yeah, good stuff. And the final thing before I forget is that it was also the podium underground, which just like...
Yeah, I actually haven't seen any coverage of this, so I'd love to hear what you saw.
Are you joking or not?
No, I haven't. I was travelling on the day of it and missed all the social media coverage.
Because what I was going to say is the job that they've done from a social media perspective, I think, is quality. Like they've obviously run a content competition now, which I think the final just ended and you could vote for, you know, who was there that created the best content, whether it be a reel, photos, whatever. But I was so skeptical about the event. And I think when Chris Barnes asked me to do it, I actually said to him, I said, oh, I don't know if those corners are for me kind of thing. Yeah. You know, running on a go-kart circuit, it being, you know, a heat semi and a final on the same day. There was a million reasons why you could have thought, I'm not sure if that's going to work, but and the first time they were supposed to do it, actually, I think it was the weekend the Queen passed away, so they had to reschedule. But absolutely fair play. I've seen nothing but positive stuff from the event, from the people that ran, including, you know, first-hand people that I've spoke to from Cambridge that did it. The coverage of it looks, you know, really good. The prize money that they offered, the kind of atmosphere of the event, the amount of people that they managed to get down and the way the event was presented, I think, was fantastic. So, of course, it's not for everyone doing some kind of underground race. But what I hope it does is shows other event organizers or people you know, or even brands, etc., that might have the resources to give an event organizer some cash to do an event, that this style of event can really take off. And actually, we can break the mold of it being a traditional race of, yeah, you know, it has to be around an oval or it has to be around a perfectly measured track or whatever it might be. It stripped back everything, it threw times out the window, and it just made it about racing. No GPS, no nothing. Like, I doubt Super Shoes even can help you that much, to be honest, on a track like that. So yeah, it was won by Zach Seddon, who won the men's race with Jeremy Dempsey second. I'm doing this off the top of my head, by the way. And the women's, I don't suppose you've got it up, Ben. Megan, I'm forgetting her name. It's not Megan Keith. Megan somebody who won the women's in first. Holly Archer second.
Holly Archer was second, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, Megan, I apologise for that because I don't have it up. But yeah, well done, because absolutely solid running. And they both walked away with a grand each for winning. So
amazing.
Spend your money wisely. But yeah, shout out to Podium because that was a great event.
Yeah, that is some solid prize money, actually. What did they give to second and third? 500, 250, something like that.
500 and 300, I think.
Yeah, that's really good. Megan Davis was the name.
Megan Davis, there you go. Sorry about that.
I think she's a Presio athlete from the photo, maybe.
Cool. Sounds good. So I think that's all the running news. I'm not sure exactly what's coming up this week in terms of racing and stuff, but we'll find out for next episode and bring you that detail. I think we're all out of the racing loop at the moment.
Yeah, we'll get back into it.
Oh, there is a Battersea 5K coming up. I think that's what it is. So, should we jump into a couple of listeners' questions? I know we don't have Tom, so we can just do a couple.
Yeah, why not? You want to start us off with one?
Yeah, well, I guess question for you, Ben, seeing as though it fits in quite well with the topic. Craig dropped us a message on Instagram to ask, he's doing his first marathon, and would we recommend doing a marathon in the UK or a marathon abroad? And if so, where? Do you have any recommendations or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a good one. I actually have never run a marathon in the UK, so I can't really speak on that behalf. But I would advise that if you're going to do one abroad, do one in Europe that's fairly close, because from experience, traveling to the other side of the world to run a marathon is not ideal in terms of getting there on the plane, adjusting to different time zones. So especially if it's your first marathon, I'd consider looking at something like, I don't know, Valencia or somewhere in Europe where you can get a fast time, but you still get a little bit of a holiday out of it. That would be my advice.
Did you run Copenhagen? Was your first marathon, right?
Yeah, first marathon.
Did you run? You don't have to answer if you don't want. Did you run that solely off your own back, or was that part of like a brand thing, or like did you get some help with going out there and doing it?
I think I wanted to do it off my own back, and then I emailed the race organizers. They gave me a free accommodation, and then I ended up getting a sponsor on board. So it was kind of like I organized that one myself, basically. But I did have financial support, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because that's the only thing I was going to say, is like if it's your first marathon, depending on whether you're someone who like is going to travel alone or if you've got kids and family that you want to take to watch you and stuff like that, I know from a lot of people in that position I've spoken to that the convenience of doing a marathon closer to home, even if it isn't the glitz and glamour of the super fast course or the weather or whatever, can outweigh it based on, you know, like you said, only having to drive an hour or 2 hours to the race, or having all your family and your kids being able to be there watching you on the course, and that familiarity can be quite nice. So maybe for your first marathon, just think about convenience, think about keeping the cost relatively low, because a lot can go wrong in a marathon. You don't want to spend a fortune on it.
Yeah, 100%.
And as you get into it and as you commit more to the training and you think this is a really good time, then start, you know, looking further afield and look at the majors or where it might be faster and stuff like that. But I think there's maybe it's the northerner in me, but I don't think there's any need to go crazily overboard straight away.
No, I agree.
Marathons are sexy right now and everyone's going to the back and beyond to do them. As you know, Ben, it can be such a cool experience, but
yeah,
if it's your
not necessary for your first one, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Another marathon related question. I think I actually chose marathon related questions because it's not long till London Marathon. So I think we might pick up a fair few listeners that are looking to cram in some last minute tips. One from Cole Running, who you know very well, Ben, is a fellow content creator. He said, what age should you start doing marathons?
That's a good question, Cole.
Any thoughts on that?
Well, people can do them at any age, really. But I think in terms of being at your best in terms of athletic performance, it's usually late 20s, really. Most people start doing marathons. Focus on the shorter stuff in your teens. In your early 20s, you probably want to move up the distance, maybe do a couple of half marathons, and then towards that 30 years old mark, I would say, is the best time to start doing marathons. And if you look at the best marathoners on the planet, they're in the late 30s. So yeah, definitely don't rush into it if it's not something you feel like your body's ready for. Build up to it. For Cole running, I know he's done quite a few half marathons, and I think he plans to stick at that sort of distance as his maximum for the next few years, but he's only like 22-ish, something like that. So that's probably the right decision for him. But if you feel like you're a marathon runner at heart and you want to do one at 19, 20, then there's no reason why you can't. It's just you need to commit to the training and the miles. So, yeah, that would be my advice.
Yeah, I generally agree. I think kind of like I'd just be logical about it. Like you kind of want to max out every distance before you move up a distance is what I'd say to an extent. So it's like if you want to run a 40-minute 10K, then you'd be stupid to try and do that if you've not run a 20-minute 5K because you're going to have to do two of those back-to-back. And the exact same principle is for the marathon. No matter what you want to be able to do, whether you want to complete it or complete it in a certain time, if you can't run at least half or three quarters of that distance at even quicker than the goal pace because you need to give a buffer for how much you're going to fatigue, then I don't think it makes sense for you to move up because your scope for improvement is going to be kind of way more limited, if you see what I mean. So I would just build up, you know, get a really good 5K under your belt. Once you're happy, get a good 10K. But yeah, some people are suited way more to longer distances than other. The other thing I will say is Sunday Podcast did a great episode of Emil Keres, who obviously is debuting in London this year. And Emil's only the year above me, I think. So I think he might be 25, 26, something like that. And he made a great argument, to be fair, which is, he wants, when he's at his peak physically, he also wants to have the experience of running a marathon.
Yeah.
So he's starting a bit earlier than he knows. So he knows he's not going to run his fastest marathon this year and he's not going to be at his physical peak for where he wants to be. But when he does get to that physical peak of, you know, whatever it might be, 28, 29, 30, whatever, he'll also have the mental experience of running a couple of marathons. He'll have them under his belt. So he'll be a more well-rounded athlete. So I think if you're someone who just wants to complete a marathon or maybe your lifetime goal is to run a sub-3 marathon, you don't have to think about it so deeply. But for someone like him who's thinking, actually, how can I get a medal on a world stage out of this marathon or how can I win a marathon major?
Yeah.
He's planning, you know, years
ahead.
You
need that experience.
Yeah, I guess that's the difference between someone that's committing their life to it and someone where it's a hobby, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, should we do one more question?
Yeah, should we go for favorite? Oscar says, what's your favorite pre-race meal?
Favorite pre-race meal? Interesting. It depends when I'm racing. See, most of the races I do are not actually in the morning.
Like,
I can't remember the last time I raced in the morning, honestly, or if I did, it was probably like 11 a.m. or something, which is, you know, pretty late on compared to like road races and stuff. So I tend to just be pretty simple with whatever it is. But my favorite is some sort of rice concoction. I find rice way better than pasta personally for like how it's...
You'd eat that even in the morning before a race?
No, not in the morning.
You mean the night before?
Yeah, but this is pre-race meal, right? So this is like, I'm talking...
Yeah, but is he talking about like the night before or is he talking the morning of the race?
I thought we're talking about like just before you're going to race, you know?
Yeah.
Well, either way, if it's before I'm going to race and it's not breakfast, then some kind of
rice.
Yeah, don't normally have meat kind of... No. If I do, it's chicken... That like, you know, that kind of thing. If it's the morning, yeah. If it's the morning, my goat stew. If it's the morning, then I'm not too good at eating in the morning, but it would always be kind of some amount of bagels, probably with jam or something, just because that's pretty easy for me to get down.
Yeah, I'm the same.
I have some really good product from OTE is the Duo bars, which are like a rice crispy.
Oh yeah,
with a bit of chocolate on, which are only small things, but they've got 40 grams of protein in, and they carbohydrate. Yeah, and they sit really well on me. So something like that. But yeah, I'm not one of these people that sticks to routine. I've eaten enough shit pre-race meals and still run well. So
it's I'm pretty much the same. I stick to what I always have before my normal like big sessions, which would probably be like a bagel with a bit of jam on toast, or maybe even a couple of eggs fried with, again, some sort of carbohydrate. Night before, I'm more of a, probably would go for more pasta than rice myself. I would go for a nice little, I don't know, tomato pasta, something, again, no, try and avoid too much vegetable and protein the night before a race, just so that your stomach is settled. Stick to pretty simple, basic carbohydrate and sugars. And then, good to go.
I tell you what I did have that was elite, right? So when I was racing at Liverpool in November, it was the European trials. The night before, I'd gone up to Liverpool by myself and I was just in this little hotel room. And it was when England were playing against the US in the, was it the World Cup?
Or
was
Yeah,
it must be the World Cup. US. Yeah. And they were playing the night before. So I wanted to stay in and watch the match. And I was pretty close to Liverpool City Centre. So I thought, all right, what am I going to eat? And I was looking on like Deliveroo or Uber Eats or what was close. And there was a Nando's. And for some reason, I just thought, you know what? I'll get a Nando's. That'd be really nice. So I got like a chicken pita, got some chips, got some rice, got some broccoli. And I was just sat on the bed, right? I went to pick it up, sat on the bed, brown paper bag in my boxers, England versus US on, about to race the European trials the next day. And then I went and got a GB vest. So just shows you can eat a Nando's before and you'll be fine.
Beautiful. What a lovely story.
I know. Well,
that'll wrap things up for this week, I reckon.
Yeah, what are you up to this week? You got any crazy plans? You said you're going to London.
Yeah, I'm down in London on Thursday with Tom and the Pro Direct team to film a video about the new on-running Cloud Surfer. So I've got that to film. And then in terms of training, I'm just trying to ramp it up a little bit more than last week now. I've got 15 by 1K at the weekend, and tonight I've got 5 by 2K, 1K as the session. So some meaty marathon sessions, ramp up the mileage a little bit, and yeah, get ready to sort of hit some peak mileage before Boston.
Lovely stuff.
About yourself?
Very similar. Just focus on training.
When is your next race, by the way?
I'm not racing until the end of April.
So
plenty of time.
So you've got all of the rest of March, the rest of April, and then what race are you doing? Yeah. What's the first one?
I think I'm going to race the Comeback 5000 at Battersea Park.
Oh, cool.
On the track. I think that's Friday the 28th of April. At the moment, that's what my first will be. Just get some laps in, just kind of get practice racing, because I've not raced on the track in so long. And then I'm really trying to go for it on the 20th of May. I've got a race in Germany, a 1500. So, that's my plan.
That's the A goal.
To try and run fast for the first half of the season. We'll see how it goes. So, yeah, just a couple of sessions this week. Filming something for Coros, which should be good.
Cool.
Little bit of content about one of the watch features that they've got. Exciting stuff.
Bit of track mode or?
No, a bit of base fitness, actually. Base fitness. So it's part of the me, Tommy and Becky, the coaching we do for NRG coaching. We've just started a relationship with Coros. So we're each producing a bit of content about, you know, different metrics and things throughout the rest of the year. So
That sounds interesting.
It's a pretty good opportunity to, you know, for someone like me to get in touch with a brand and, you know, see how things work and do that kind of thing. So that should be pretty good.
Best of luck with that.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, mate. Well,
and I'll catch you soon.
It's been a good one. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, no problem. But if anyone wants to submit some questions for next week's episode, then just a bit of a reminder, you can do that via runitthreewayspodcast@gmail.com, or you can drop us a message on Instagram. You'll probably get Callum respond to you because he's the most active over on there. Appreciate you doing that. But that's pretty much it for episode 14. See you again next week.
All right, people. Bye-bye.